Welcome to Season 3 of Love in Context. This season, we're exploring the life of Jesus, step by step, and uncovering what his story teaches us about loving God and others. Here on Love in Context, we're all about having real conversations about how to live out that love in practical, everyday ways, and understanding the Bible in its full context. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive into Season 3 of Love and Context. Welcome back to the Love in Context podcast.
That was less singing.
Welcome back to the loving. There you go.
Just for everyone else.
I mean, it's like, I think it's like 4 weeks in a row, 5 weeks, maybe mm-hmm. 7 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Indefinitely in a row. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Welcome back. It's me, Ben, and it's that guy, mm-hmm. Spencer.
So part of the singing joke, just so you guys know, Ben leads worship at our church
mm-hmm.
most Sundays, and then I'll fill in a couple times a year when he's not there. And so Ben, with the other vocalists, will be like, oh, if you do this, 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 and like, you know, lay out all these parts. And then when I get there, they're like, all right. I was like, you know what? If it sounds okay, I'm okay with it. And they're like, oh, so do what we want. I was like, yeah, just don't sound horrible. And they're like, great.
That is a general instruction that you give to most people is don't sound horrible.
Don't sound horrible.
Don't sound horrible. In fact, listener, if this is you today, just don't sound horrible.
Uh-huh.
This is such a, so good. All right. So we're at a couple of things. I realize we're going a little bit out of sequence, but you know what? It's our podcast. We can do whatever we want. But we're in the life of Jesus. And today we just have on the calendar, we're going to be talking about the Transfiguration. So the story about Jesus going up on the mountain and mm-hmm. being transfigured. Context-wise, I just want to kind of sandwich this in here with what we've been talking about. There's been the feeding of the 5,000. There's been Jesus walking on water. There's been him asking them, like, hey, who do people say that I am? And Peter completely nails it. And then he tells them, he's like, hey, by the way, I'm going to be going to Jerusalem. I'm going to be dying. And Peter is like, no, you're not. And he gets called Satan. Mm-hmm. So really high highs here for Peter mm-hmm. and some really low lows here mm-hmm. for Peter. And right on the heels of that is going to be the story of the Transfiguration. So I'm going to read out of Matthew. There is a couple of different places you can read this. It's in Matthew 16. It's in Mark 8. And it's in Luke 9. Starting in verse 1 of 17, it says, after 6 days, this is after he just called Peter Satan.
Mm-hmm.
6 days later. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah, talking with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. While he was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud said, this is my son whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus came and touched them. Get up, he said. Don't be afraid. When they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has raised from the dead. The disciples asked him, why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first? Jesus replied, to be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things. But I tell you, Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize him, but have done it to him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. Then the disciples understood that he was talking to them about John the Baptist. All right. This story has a lot.
What are you talking about?
It's just a few things going on here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and we're just going to point out some obvious imagery that's going on. Mm-hmm. Jesus' face is shining like Moses mm-hmm. when he's on the mountain talking with God in the presence of God, right? Mm-hmm. His clothes are white, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be a symbol of purity. He's talking to Moses and Elijah. You have mm-hmm. the law and the prophets, right? Mm-hmm. You have Jesus, who is the very friend of, Moses, who is the very friend of God. And mm-hmm. you have Elijah, who is taken up in a whirlwind,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have like these legendary figures. And, so that's a few things that are going on. There's the cloud that is on the mountain. The Shekinah glory is going to be very reminiscent of what's going on in Exodus. You have God calling down. This is my son whom I love. Listen to mm-hmm. him. It's going to be very reminiscent of Deuteronomy, mm-hmm. where Moses is continually saying, listen to God, listen to God, listen mm-hmm. to God, listen to God. And so that's a lot of, there's a lot of steeped imagery going on in this story.
Mm-hmm.
So why these three guys?
Why not?
Why not? That's helpful.
Well, so just to give some context on that, if you look at the rabbinic system of having disciples that follow you, you typically, one thing, we talked about this before, but typically to have 12 disciples would be a little much, right? Typically it'd be five or six.
Yeah.
And out of that five or six, you would have one or two that followed you more closely than the other ones, right? And so it's not uncommon for Jesus to be like, hey, you three, Peter, James, and John, are going to go with me to places that the other disciples are not.
Right.
So that wouldn't be an uncommon thing. So just putting that on the table. You also have, with those three, you also have the Jesus does a tremendous church planting through those three, right? He calls, I don't know if he's done it yet, but he calls Peter the rock,
right,
of whom the church will be built on, all right? John is probably the, am I mixing my Johns up? I don't think I am, but John.
It's possible, but sometimes it's hard to distinguish which one we're talking about.
Yeah. John is also one of the most literate of the disciples, right?
Coming from a priestly family would be likely. Yep.
Yep. Most likely the most literate of the disciples. So most likely to be able to record, to be able to help out on that front.
Mm-hmm.
And then James. Now, there is question on what James we're talking about as well.
Yeah, it tells us that it is James, the brother of John.
Mm-hmm.
John, the brother of James. Okay, so there's James and John, the brother of James.
Mm-hmm.
So which James are we talking about? Is this James and John, the brother, those two brothers, or is this...
So we don't fully know. We don't fully know on that. There's argument, there's debate on that and all of that as well. But it's not uncommon, but bringing back to the point, it's not uncommon for a rabbi to have a couple disciples who follow him more closely than other disciples.
Well, and so the crazy thing is, so with rabbinic, with disciples and rabbis, like you said, it's typically only like four or five, but Jesus has at least 72 because he sends out 72 at one point. Then he has 12 that are much closer and representing Israel. But then he has three that he is like pouring into on a regular basis. And of course, then he's also speaking to multitudes. So you actually like see this, like Jesus, one, he goes off into, we've talked about this in the past, but he goes off into desolate places, into wilderness places to pray and commune with God. But then he's got these three that he spends more time with. He's got the 12 that he spends, you know, more time with than everybody else. Then he has these 72 that are following him and really spending more regular time. But then he's still got multitudes that are just showing up in different places. What I think on a very practical level, there is something about how to build your life relationally there. Right? Because you cannot feed the way that Jesus fed into the 12 into 500. Right? You have a limited amount of who you are. Like, I mean, like the amount of time, amount of energy, and also like you can only become so close to so many people. We've talked about in the past, I have a lot of friends, but I have very few friends that I let speak into my life.
Okay. Yeah. Take Facebook, for example, right? Like how many friends do you have on Facebook?
I think it's like 1,000 or something like that.
Okay. How many of those do you talk to on a regular basis?
Regular basis? Let's say once a year, probably 200.
Probably 200.
Right.
Okay. Out of those 200, how many of those do you talk to on a monthly basis?
30.
30. Okay. What about a weekly basis?
Probably down to 15.
Right. So,
yeah.
So you guys see that this is just a natural progression.
Yeah.
Right. Like we don't have time to, you know, I don't know how many, I'm not very active on Facebook. I don't know how many friends I got on there, but like,
I mean, it's at least seven,
but it's like, I don't talk to all the people who are quote unquote friends on Facebook. And when it boils down to the people I do talk to in my life, you know, on a weekly basis, there's probably six or seven that I talk to on a regular basis.
Right.
And outside of people I work with, right?
Right.
Right. It's a small circle. And then there's other people I connect with more on a monthly basis, other people on a quarterly basis, other people on a yearly basis, right? It all, it just depends on that depth of relationship, how much time has been invested in that relationship, right?
And I think a lot of the thing about that, when you start to talk about going from a rabbi disciple perspective, I think sometimes we overwhelm ourselves when we're like, we need to go preach the gospel to all nations. Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
You also need to find a few people that you're investing heavily into.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing about these three disciples is, and this is one theory I've heard because like I said, there's still debate on which James we're talking about. Right. But there is a theory that these are James and John, the sons of Zebedee, which were a fisherman family. Okay. So to have your three closest disciples be fishermen would also be another, would tie into the least of these comment.
Poor Andrew.
Yeah.
Poor Andrew's left off on that one. It's just like saying. You get James and John and Peter and Andrew's out in the back going,
hey, I fish too. What you guys doing?
Yeah.
I'm good with a net.
By the way, there's one detail in the Gospel of Luke that somebody mentions on this. It's in Luke 9, verse 31. Two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared in glorious splendor talking with Jesus. Okay, that part's in Matthew. They spoke about his departure, which he was about to bring to fulfillment at Jerusalem. The word departure there is not departure. It's actually the same Greek word that they use to translate Exodus. So not surprising that Jesus is talking to Moses about an Exodus, right? He has some experience with that, you know? But yeah, so you got the least of these being heavily invested in, and these guys are also going to be the ones who take up the mantle of really, leading the church. If this is indeed the James and the John that are in, and the one that goes to, ends up going into Asia. And then there's Peter who's going to be, traveling and setting up or, leading in the church. But then there's going to be James who's in charge in Jerusalem. Right. That makes a lot of sense where these three would have showed up in that capacity. Little beef here that I have with maybe how quick we are to just get on to Peter. I don't know how many sermons I've sat in here where they're like, and Peter just didn't get it. Now, to be fair, prior in this, like the next previous chapter, he didn't get it and he got called Satan. But Peter's quoting Zechariah. Because in the book of Zechariah, they have this, especially in rabbinic times, in the times of Jesus, this quote from Zechariah has to do with being on the mountain, and that they're going to, it's going to be a time of Sukkot, because it's going to be a time of an exodus. So he sees Moses, he sees Elijah, they're talking about departure, Jesus is shining with glory on a mountain. He says, let's build a Sukkot. Right? He's like, I see what's going on. This is Zechariah. And God just goes from heaven, and he's like, hey, this is my son. Pay attention to him.
It's also a thing about hospitality, right? Where Peter ties back to Genesis when Abraham welcomes the angels in, and Peter's seeing these holy figures, and he's like, we need to do something to make them feel welcome.
Right.
Make them feel home. Make them feel hospitable. It's part of their culture.
Right.
So nothing culturally that Peter is saying right here is off.
Well, and honestly, he doesn't even get rebuked. Neither by God speaking from heaven. Or by Jesus, or by Moses, or Elijah. Nobody rebukes him because they're like, yeah, but no. Like, yes, you're actually seeing that, but the tabernacle is not what you think. Right? Like, because I think Peter, in some capacity, gets that Jesus is the Son of Man, referenced in Daniel. Right? Because he's just said that, hey, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. But also, he doesn't quite, they understand what's about to happen, but they have no idea.
Well, and we face that tension in our lives too.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like, where we will hear something, we'll even say it, like, yes, I hear it, I believe this, but then when the rubber meets the road, you're like, oh, okay, I'm going back to my old ways.
Yeah.
Right? So that you have that here where Peter's like, yes, Jesus is the Son of God, he's the Messiah, and then these other holy figures show up, and Peter's like, oh, he's on the equal plane as Moses and Elijah, right? These figures he's heard about his whole life. And then that's where God interjects and is like, wait, no. That's where God has something to say.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily, like we said, it's not an admonishment. It's a correction. Like it's just like, it's like, hey, no, you think, you know, listen to what he's saying. Now, why is that important? Because what's happened in the previous chapter, Jesus said, Son of Man has to go to Jerusalem to be tried, crucified, and, you know, he's going to be put to death. And Peter's like, no, this is not what's going to happen. And right, you're not listening.
Yeah.
Like, you have ears, but you don't hear. Like, you have eyes, but you're not seeing.
Yeah, and don't think you're any different than Peter.
No.
Because, I mean, we do the same thing. Where something profound will happen at church, in the sermon, in the music, whatever, and you'll be like, oh, man, my eyes are opened. And then when rubber meets the road, you'll be like, okay, I need to go to church on Sunday, but my football team is playing in the morning. Maybe I'll just watch, quote, unquote, watch online with my phone off to the side with the sermon playing so I can be like, I was at church. I might have just called a few people out there.
Yeah, it's weird. We haven't even posted the episode, and I can see our viewership dropping. It's weird. At least we didn't talk about hockey.
Yeah.
Yet.
We don't have time to do that today.
Yeah. This story is it's so important because there's not a lot of things that Jesus, well, there's a lot of things that Jesus does that are overtly divine, but there's not a lot of things where Jesus like just shines with glory mm-hmm. in his ministry because, he is, Torah made flesh, God mm-hmm. in human self. Philippians is going to say he empties himself to mm-hmm. be human, right? To walk on the earth yeah. and suffer as we suffer and, experience as we experience. But there's like, this is one of those times where he goes up on the mountain. It's almost like it's like the last huddle before mm-hmm. they go to what they're going to go do. Since we're talking about football, it's the last huddle. Mm-hmm. And referencing Luke says they're going to be talking about the Exodus, right? I also wonder how that works. Mm-hmm. You know, like I sit here and I just wonder. I'm like, so you go up the mountain and you're like, hey, I'm going to talk to representative of the law, representative of the prophets. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, what is that?
Well. Yeah. Another theory I've heard on this is that Peter was trying to get them to stay because, you have Jesus and Moses and Elijah talking about an Exodus. And so there is a theory that in Peter's mind or Peter, James, and John probably, but yeah. in their minds that it was happening right then and there.
Yeah.
Like these figures showed up. Let's talk Exodus. And they're like, whoa, 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 let's get you to stay. That's another theory. Yeah. Now,
well, and I mean, yeah. And if you're thinking that like in their thinking mm-hmm. in turn of the century, Israel, their thinking is, yes, we do need an Exodus. We need the Goliath that is Rome to be toppled.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We needed to walk through the Red Sea and see all the Roman legions, you know,
mm-hmm.
put into that sea. And when you have that mentality, you're always going to paint everything through that lens.
Yep.
But what is an Exodus really about? I mean, even in the Exodus, God is leading his people out, but he's also placing judgment on the gods and the things that Egypt is trusting in
mm-hmm.
and inviting Egypt into this relationship, which was something we referenced back in season one.
Yeah.
And that, like, God is always extending an invitation for people to come and follow Yahweh. And so, like, even the Exodus wasn't about just crushing Egypt. It was about crushing all the things that Egypt trusted.
Yeah.
When there's not a God not bound by geography, there's a God not bound by time, there's a God not bound by circumstances, there's a God mm-hmm. not bound by anything that this world has to offer, because he's the one through whom all of it comes to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he says, man, I just want you to come and be with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you get Peter wanting to make these memorials, and then you get God speaking. And this is a New Living Translation, but even as he spoke, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my dearly loved son who brings me great joy. Listen to him." Disciples were terrified, fell down on their face. A couple things just to note here. Nowhere does it say God was angry.
Yep.
Nowhere does it say God was mad. We've hinted at, we've talked about this. Nowhere does it say God was yelling, right? Right? It just says, but a voice showed up and said, "This is my son who brings me great joy. Listen to him."
Mm-hmm.
And then the disciples were terrified and fell face down on the ground. And just so we're clear, there's a tie back there to Isaiah. Isaiah did that when he had an encounter with God in the temple. Ezekiel did that. There's also a precursor to John in Revelation
mm-hmm.
who fell down as if he couldn't move, right? The idea of falling down in fear when you physically encounter the presence of God
mm-hmm.
is a common thing.
Yeah, and 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 yes, fear as in like, but it's more of it's when you actually get an accurate representation mm-hmm. of the disparity between who you are and who God is. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use the word kavod. It's the weight. Mm-hmm. The weight of the presence of God. Mm-hmm. They talk about like the face of God was always before me. The presence of God is before mm-hmm. me. It is you're getting a true representation of just how small you are, mm-hmm. and it presses you to the ground. Mm-hmm. Sometimes literally, mm-hmm. right? Not because God is overbearing, but because there's just a recognition that, oh man, I'm an ant balling up my fist.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you have that encounter of a perfect holy deity, mm-hmm. right? And you feeling broken and small and tiny, like that's just one of those things where it's like so overwhelming mm-hmm. that puts you at a loss for words.
There was, I mean, that it, I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I grew up Southern Baptist, which by the way, a lot of my good friends are Southern Baptists. Mm-hmm. And, but we just didn't have words for what God did in my life in high school, mm-hmm. Because there's not as much of a exposure to the Spirit. But we were in a prayer meeting during high school, and I got hit. And you know, like we were just praying, and I asked God to fill us, to move in our presence, to make our faith come alive. Mm-hmm. And where they talk about when you're filled with the Holy Spirit, that you almost like it's like you get electrocuted. People talk about like coursing electricity. I was like, it was like I got static shocked in my body. Mm-hmm. And it was from that point forward. Like I know the day, I know the moment. Like it's not that my faith was. It's not that it was. It became effective. It was effective long before that.
Yeah.
It came alive. Mm-hmm. And from that moment forward, I started to, like, I would have, like, visions and I would have dreams and God would speak to me. But the presence of God was moving in my life. And it was when the presence of God comes into your life, it's like sometimes it has, like, a physical reaction. Mm-hmm. Now, can that be abused? Of course. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, we could easily go off on a bunch of those things. But... Mm-hmm. Just because it's something you don't understand doesn't mean it's not something that's legit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When they were walking away at the end, they asked Jesus about why did they say Moses has to be the one to come? Right. Mm-hmm. Or, not Elijah has to come first. Right. I was actually going to pull this up and they're referencing actually back to Malachi. Mm-hmm. I know that book that all of you have read so many times, mm-hmm. right?
When was the last sermon series we did on Malachi?
It was not that long ago, but.
Well, no, we did a Minor Prophets. It wasn't specifically Malachi. We did like a brief overview of all the Minor Prophets and sometimes more than one Minor Prophet in one sermon.
Yeah. In other words, I think we're due for a sermon series through Malachi.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. So in chapter 4, it says, "Surely the day is coming. It will burn like a furnace. All the arrogant and every evildoer will be stubble. And the day that is coming will set them on fire, says the Lord Almighty. Not a root or a branch will be left of them. But for you who revere my name, the Sun of Righteousness will rise with healing in its rays. And you will go out and frolic like well-fed calves. Mm-hmm. Then you will trample on the wicked. They will be ashes under the soles of your feet on the day when I act, says the Lord Almighty. Remember the law of my servant Moses, the decrees and laws I gave him at Horeb for all Israel. Mm-hmm. See, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the hearts of the children to their parents, or else I will come and strike the land with total destruction." Mm-hmm. Okay, read that again. "He will turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the hearts of the children to their parents, or else I will come and strike the land with total destruction." Mm-hmm. And so who do we see? Jesus on a mountain with Moses and Elijah as he's talking about being the Son of Man, referenced in Daniel. And they're like, oh, but why did they say Elijah has to end that? Cause like they're like, well, where's Elijah? Mm-hmm. Right. And he's like, well, Elijah already came. Like, that's who John the Baptist is. He's here to preach a message of repentance. Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is here. It's ready for you to interact with it. Mm-hmm. I was like, this was the message that was preceding. He was the reed that
Which
was...
also echoes Elijah's message mm-hmm. all throughout his ministry. So
it's almost like, and this is not something that's surprising to you, mm-hmm. But sometimes it's surprising to Christians. This book is not an Old Testament, New Testament. It's one story.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus is stepping into a context of things that have been going on for generations and God has been doing in the hearts of people since the very beginning.
Yeah.
Right? That's not to say that it's not a new covenant, and that's not to even say that you shouldn't call it Old Testament and New Testament. I don't think that's inappropriate. But I think sometimes when we do that, we're like, well, it's old. We don't need it anymore. Well, no. The old informs the new. Was it you that was telling me that the first Lord of the Rings movie you watched was Two Towers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hadn't read any of the books. And I walk into this movie and I see little people walking through the woods. And then it ends with little people walking through the woods. This is a bad description of Lord of the Rings. And I was like, what just happened? I went into the movie, like, because I had no idea. Nobody had told me anything. I went into the movie thinking, like, gladiator ring, people fighting it out type thing.
Perfect.
And so, like, I was way off.
I wish that at some point, like, with that being your first movie, if you had, like, sat down right there and tried to guess what the beginning of the story and the end of the story was about.
Yeah.
Just jumping in the middle.
Yeah. So then after I watched that, I went back and I was like, I need to get some context. And I read all three of the books and I was like, this makes a lot more sense now, right?
So interesting thing, I was actually watching a video from a Tolkien scholar.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, this is not really related to the podcast, but you guys get to listen anyways. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Lord of the Rings actually should be split into six books, not three. That Tolkien actually wrote it as six, but because they were having printing issues during the time that it was being published, they actually formatted it into three books because it was easier to publish.
Okay.
Yeah, just random. Because
That actually makes a lot of sense because one of his writing partners was actually C.S. Lewis, who did his series in seven books.
Yeah.
So that actually...
Yeah, especially when you factor in, like, with this... what's that? What's the other collection of books that he has? It's a Cimmerillion.
Something like that.
Yeah, I'm going to say Cimmerillion, and somebody, you can correct me, only if you can pronounce it correctly.
We just lost like half our followers because they're like, you mispronounced that. How dare you?
There is, yeah. Jesus comes into a context. And so like he goes and takes them on the mountain and he takes these boys that have been steeped in Torah.
Yeah.
They've been steeped in messianic prophecy. Mm-hmm. They've been steeped in this world to come. And he says, come and take a look at what's going on here. And I don't know why Jesus needs to talk to Moses and Elijah, but he takes them along so they can see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're about to enter a place where you're going to need some hope to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
Like the story of the last week of Jesus, which we're coming in on pretty soon. We got a few more weeks of different things that we're covering, but the stories of the last week of Jesus, he does a lot of confrontation and the crucifixion and when they have to sit there for 3 days while they're waiting to figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
It's going to be important to have hope.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's interesting because he says that they're not even allowed to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Until he resurrects.
Mm-hmm.
And he's told them he's going to resurrect. He's like, you can't talk about it until then.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So like, what are the takeaways for us here? Like, and I think one of the big ones is, a couple things is one, you don't always know how the Lord's working.
Correct.
Right. You might think you see one thing and be like, this is what's happening. And then God might show up and be like, actually, let's do a little bit of a turn here. This is what we need to focus on.
Yeah.
Right. And so sometimes we will enter into a situation where we'll be like, this is how it's going to be resolved. This is how I'm going to fix it. And then you'll hear the story and you'll see what's actually happening. And you'll be like, maybe I don't know as much as I think I do.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, it's okay to step back and be like, okay, that didn't go my way. I didn't get to set up my three tents for these three amazing people.
Right.
But I do get to focus on this one person who's actually leading me down this path. Who's actually leading me into a life with him. And so it's okay to be like, okay, that didn't go my way. Lord, what do you have for me?
I think also you can have a biblically framed mindset on what events are happening and still miss what God is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's why it becomes more important to have that relational perspective, right?
Yeah.
We have this time where we're just chatting with God and being like, hey, I think this is what I should do. And he's like, yeah, I hear you. Also, you need to go do this.
Yeah.
You're like, that doesn't have anything to do with what I wanted to do. And he's like, that's okay.
You know? Like, it absolutely does, actually.
It absolutely does. And tell you what, after you're going to recognize exactly why you had to go do that. Mm-hmm. How many times in your life do like God is like putting, you're going through something and you know, like you're right in the middle of where God wants you to be and it's not great. But then like later you look back and you're like, oh yeah, that's exactly where I needed to be. Mm-hmm. Right. Like today I can look back and be like, oh, absolutely. I even think, I'm going to close this story real quick mm-hmm. here.
Yeah. You're good.
Tara and I served at a church. We've talked about there was a church that we served at that we got kind of chewed up and spit out at, mm-hmm. right? And it was a really like bad experience. And but I was like, I knew for a long time that God wanted us there. Now I overstayed God's call there, mm-hmm. right? Because I was like, oh, you know, we can fix this. You know, we couldn't. Mm-hmm. but while we were there, like I was like, we were very definite that our call was there. But it was hard and it was rough and like had a lot of like just things that we had to deal with. And I'm like, I don't understand like why I'm going through all these things, except now, you know, 12 years later, I've actually run into very similar situations that churches are going through on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Because I was in the middle of that. I recognize signs and I'm able to talk to people and have real mm-hmm. conversations about like problematic behavior,
yeah,
problematic things. Because I sat in rooms where I was berated for 45 minutes to an hour, mm-hmm. For everything under the sun that you can think of. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't really bother me when people speak badly about me. As far as like being able to talk love back to them.
Yeah.
Right. Like especially when it comes to like leading in faith and following Jesus, like, I mean, but I didn't in the moment, I was like, what's the purpose of this? But now there's so many times that even like this year where God has used the experience of what I went through in order for me to effectively lead now.
Yeah.
And knowing that, I still don't like the pain. Mm. I still don't like the turmoil. I don't like the stress and everything that we had to go through, but I'm like, was it worth that to be able to help with what's going on today?
Yeah.
And the answer is usually yes.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'm like, I don't know. But most of the time the answer is yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oftentimes the Lord works in ways we don't understand. Actually more often than
I was going to say most of the time he works in ways we don't get.
Yeah. Right. And let's just be real, in American culture, that can be hard because we have our plans. We have our desires. We have our dreams. We have our, this is how it should be. Right. Yeah. And when Jesus enters in and is like, pulls a little bit of like, well, you know, let me reframe this for you. Mm-hmm. Let me reframe what it means to be loving. Let me reframe what it means to follow me. I was listening to a guy talk a while back, and he, I say a while back, it was like 2 weeks ago. It's just been a really long 2 weeks.
There are some weeks that feel like years.
Yes. Yes. The last couple of weeks have just been crazy for me. But I was listening to a guy talk a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about the church split that happened around 1,000 years ago, mm-hmm. where you had the Western part of Europe. They shifted to a practice-based theology, mm-hmm. where they're like, this is about what we can do, what we can produce. Mm-hmm. And then the Eastern part of Europe focused more on just being in the presence of God. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, he's like, yeah, unfortunately, he's like, we as a church, we still like to live in this practice-based theology mm-hmm. of what do I have to do? He's like, maybe we need to step back and just focus on being still and being in the presence of God.
It comes rarely back to this teaching of Jesus when he talks about, I am the vine and you are the branches. Mm-hmm. If you remain, mm-hmm. you produce fruit. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, we need to go and produce fruit. No, you need to remain. Mm-hmm. You need to abide.
Yeah.
You need to be present. You need to be connected. And when you do that, you're going to produce fruit. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, and just in the transfiguration too, you have Peter who's like, here's these people. This is what we need to do.
Yeah.
And God's like, here's Jesus. Be with him.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And so
that's actually, let's just close with that idea. Yeah. Listener, this week, Jesus says, I'm here. Mm-hmm. Just be here.
Yeah.
Be present. Mm-hmm. Be present with God.
Yeah.
Right. You might be driving on your way to work. You might be running on a treadmill. You might be herding cats mm-hmm. because, I don't know, let's talk about teachers. you know, whatever it is. I was like, wherever it is, you can be present and just be present, listening, and engaged with God wherever you are.
Yeah.
I was like, you never know when you're like, hey, I want to build Boost. And he's like, nope, just want you to be here and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're going to leave it there.
On that note.
Bye.
Have a great week.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope this conversation encouraged you and gave you fresh insights into how we can better love God and others through the powerful truths of the Bible. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions, thoughts, or suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. Your feedback means the world to us and helps shape future episodes. Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Be sure to hit that follow button and join our growing community. Thanks for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in today's world.